It's not goal!
It's over! They've done it! Evans has done it!
Welcome back to another episode of Two Woods, Four Quarters, a Harlequins podcast. What a weekend. And we felt like we've probably been saying that over the last two or three, but this certainly was one for the history books. We're sat here, it's Sunday night. It's Monday night. We've just got back from Toulouse. We've been through the door about 20 minutes. We've been travelling all day. I'm sat with my cousin Will. We only left each other's company about an hour ago. How you feeling, brother?
I'm absolutely sick of the sight of you. I'm sick of the sight of you. No, I'm kidding. We had another good weekend, didn't we?
Oh, we had a weekend, what, though.
Harlequins fans, something else. Yeah, special. Something else. We reckon about 2,500 in Toulouse, 500 at the Stoop.
Yeah.
Loads more at the Cabbage Patch as well. And I'm sure many listeners watched from home as well. One of the great weekends for the club, regardless of the result. We knew it was going to be a tough game. We were going out there to swing the bat.
Yeah.
And the bat was swung.
Yeah, gave it a good old swing, didn't we?
We certainly did. We'll get into the game a little bit more details later. A little bit frustrating that it felt like we could have beaten them, didn't
it? I know.
It felt like we could have beaten Toulouse in their own backyard. How good is that, though? We had no right.
Yeah. But
we sit here with hope, and we sit here with a handful of games left till the end of the Premiership season, and why can't we go win a trophy? But let's start off with a bit of a wrap-up from the weekend. This episode is going to be titled Tales of Toulouse, because there are many, many tales and anecdotes that we've got to tell. We had slightly different tales of Toulouse, didn't we?
Yeah.
I went out with my dad on Friday evening on the same plane as lots of other Quins fans as well. Touchdown, and then we all end up getting Ubers to the same hotel as well.
Oh, really?
pretty much. And then went across the road for a nice little dinner. I say dinner. We must have got there about 10 o'clock and the restaurant was long closed. So it was just a bit of a charcuterie board, some bread, some hummus and some pickles as well. But it was enough.
It was a good,
fill a hole and a good welcome to France. But that kicked me off. I was there Friday to Monday. Saturday was a big one in terms of responsibility, because anyone that listens to this podcast, we promised a lot in terms of fan atmosphere, and that included flares. Obviously not something you can bring on a plane. So I spent my Saturday morning on a bit of a pilgrimage around Toulouse. Went to two or three different, I guess, fancy dress shops and joke shops until I finally found some flares. Managed to cash in. I think I bought about 14 flares in the end and distributed them to various people over the weekend. And probably one of the highlights for me. How much fun were the flares?
Yeah, it was. Like you say, we were talking about it, especially when we chatted to Wev a couple of weeks ago. We mentioned doing something because we saw when Exeter played Toulouse at Stade Toulousain. Obviously, we were at Stadium de Toulouse.
Kind of wish we were at their ground. You know?
Yeah, I sort of a bit the same. Yeah, it was quite cool actually driving past it from the airport into the town.
I've done that so many times, though, when I've gone, because every time I've been to Argen or Cast or I'm sure a couple of other places as well, you fly into Toulouse and then you get the train from Toulouse down to these small little rugby towns.
Yeah.
So I've driven past the stadium quite a few times and never actually stepped foot in it.
It was my first trip into Toulouse. Obviously, it was a new one for me, but yeah, that was quite cool. It was your Saturday was a little bit different. I think it's the first time actually that we've not travelled together. You had a little half day at work on the Friday, and given that I missed a game on Saturday, or missed my game, I should say, on Saturday, is with some captaincy responsibilities. I was looking at it sort of when it all kicked off and we started booking. I thought, well, I can't go the Friday with you. I can't go to the Saturday because I'm playing, and then Sunday morning would be fine. Obviously, cheaper for the hotel, cheaper for the long weekend, all that sort of stuff. And I got down to the ground at 8:45 on Saturday morning. It had been absolutely bucketing down with rain all week, and we called the game off. This is cricket, I should say. We're out of hockey now. No one cares about that anyway, so we're out of that, into cricket. And the first thing I did before I even called the opposition skipper, texted Dallas, the first thing I did was look on Skyscanner to see if I could get a flight out that afternoon or that evening.
Obviously, there was going to be nothing, otherwise they would have snapped up long ago.
I think there was a couple of seats left on this one out of Stansted, but...
How much was that, though?
About 195 quid, I think, when I looked.
That's actually not as bad as some of the flights I'd seen.
One way. So I looked at it and I thought... Oh, I have to go home now.
You did it all right, though, didn't you? Because literally after the full-time whistle from Toulouse Exeter on that Sunday, you booked pretty quickly. What was it, about 250 or something, flights and hotel? And me and my dad booked it the following day because we couldn't quite stomach it after literally landing that day and being in a hole. So ours was about 350 all in, I think, for flights and accommodation. But I dread to think how much I spent. I mean, I dropped 180 euros on those flares. So if anybody enjoyed the flares...
Oh yeah.
You were looking at them online or holding them and you feel like you want to donate, please do let me know. We've got a link in our bio. I'm clawing back to do. Otherwise it's just gonna be loads of toast for me this week.
No, I think that is a fair thing to mention actually. If any of you did enjoy it or just did enjoy looking at it, it did actually cost Will close to 200 euros just to go and get them all for everyone. So
you know what? I may have got the international tax on that. I think the foreign attacks where my French wasn't brilliant and she just sort of went with it. So
right, yeah. But there is
Will Evans, I'd have spent any amount of money on those because I promised them to him. And if we'd ended up losing the game by 2 points and I hadn't got those flares, I'd have felt partially responsible. So I had to
do it. But there is that little PayPal link in our bio, it's like a pod donation link just for... I mean, we'd never really use it for much stuff, actually. We thought about doing it for some technology this year, but if you do want to just make a donation and just make sure that Will's not eating butters to the end of the month, then that'd be lovely. But we digress. But yeah, no, I've got to do a quick shout, actually, to Jack Duncan from Quinn's Pride, who is a travel agent, so he helped sort me out with some flights on the Sunday morning, and I had a lovely time out on the way out, which is great, and then came back on the same flight with you today. So that was the travel, but you've obviously done your little sort of 2-3 day round the... Well, yes. 2 days ran in Toulouse, but Sunday it was weird because usually we go together and we go to the hotel together.
It was good fun having you and Dave arrive, actually.
Yes.
In the spirit of shout-outs as well, we flew in with Aaron, who got an Aruba with us and was staying in the same hotel. And it was me, my dad and Aaron that were together for Friday, Saturday and most of Sunday as well. So we became a good little trio. So we weren't a man down, but we were a...
Sounds like Aaron's trying to replace me.
Maybe there's a role popping up. Who knows? But he was excellent company all weekend. And then Devin Sankey.
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
Flew in from Minnesota to come and watch this game. I think I'm right in saying it was his first ever Harlequins game. Not a bad one to come to. Hey, the biggest game in the club's history.
I think he might have come to the home one against Toulouse in the groups as well.
Maybe he's a Toulouse fan.
But certainly the first away one.
Two very good games to be at. The European Giants. So shout out to him as well. And then George and Grace, who I had a lovely chat with.
Yeah.
I lose track of time in the melting pot, which has become our home away from home. I'm sure the cabbage patch and the melting pot will have a lot in common. I think on the Saturday, I spent about 6 hours in there watching all three games of rugby and then just drinking and eating. And then Sunday after the game, we were in there again. Big fan of the melting pot. Obviously, the home of our first flare let off with all the sing song.
Well, we had to get this done, didn't we? Because we were talking about it, and we were talking about trying to get comms from some people in the club where they were going to come in exactly, and where we needed to be, and all this sort of stuff. So we got there early. There's, I don't know, it must have been about 80 or 90 of us all going on the metro together and stopping at shops to get a tinny for the way and all this sort of stuff. But
that was good fun. That felt like we were all off on a night out.
Yeah, it is. It was weird.
But everyone had a real sort of buzz about them as well.
But we didn't quite know how to get into the ground at the right location or the right this. And then there was the sort of baggage check-in at the stadium and a bit of security, and we weren't sure about flares and all this sort of stuff. And
actually, this is where we need to do another shout-out for Hillary, because Hillary kind of managed to... I don't know. I think her French is as good as it can be.
Yeah.
So she managed to find out that the Toulouse ultras, let's say, often camp out under a bridge, which is where they get the most echo. They have their flares, they have their flags, and they have their drums. And then we rocked up with our flares, our flags, our drums. Yeah. And it became a bit of a head-to-head, didn't it? But all in brilliant spirits and all loads of fun, dancing together, beating each other's drums, getting flares let off at different times. And then when our boys came through,
it's one of the coolest things. Because they're obviously on the tour bus, you can't, obviously the windows are tinted, so you can't see through. So you're just sort of looking at a big sort of, I don't know.
Do you remember the moment when the white bus turned around the corner and we all stood there like, is it our bus? Because we didn't want to let the flares off just in case it was the Toulouse bus. And that's actually why we let off that flare outside the pub in the first place, because we wanted to test it. We didn't want the boys to drive past, and we're all there trying to figure out how we work these things. So we managed to figure out how they work. But when the bus came around the corner, we were like, whose is it?
Yeah.
Quickly saw the little Joker at the front of the bus.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
The Harlequin, I should say.
Yeah. But if any of the boys, any of the players, if anyone was on that bus, whether it was, I don't know, if they have some media in there, or staff, whatever, if anybody was in there and is listening, shout out to maybe Will Evans, so I think we'll have a little listen. Maybe Laurie as well, not sure.
I wonder if they got a video.
Well, this is what I'm going to say. If any of them were in the bus and, you know, just flicked their phone out and took a little bit of video, do let us know. I'm not sure they will, because they'd have all been headphones on and getting in the zone, all that sort of stuff.
We actually had a couple of really nice messages from a couple of players as well, just showing their appreciation for not just that moment, which was obviously a significant moment pre-match, but also throughout the day. It felt like everyone galvanised around each other from a fan perspective. And
I think throughout the last, this season especially, you know, we've been to, I mean, we didn't do Racing this year. We did it last year, but, you know, travelled well this year. Cardiff, Racing, Bordeaux, Toulouse. It's been pretty amazing. And I think some of them, I'm sure all of them, but yeah, a couple of them did reach out and just say thanks for the, you know, support. And not that we do anything more than anyone else does, but just been a bit more busy around it, I suppose.
We're just quite active on social, aren't you? I think it's really cool, all the different pockets of Harlequin supporters groups you've got. You've obviously got Quinza, you've got the podcast, you've got TIH, sort of Friends in the Stoop. And then, I mean, Dan Dollop, the ever-present Harlequins fan, home or away, he is always there. So there's plenty of big Harlequins names out there now that just love travelling and supporting the boys. So nice to just get a message from them to say, look, we saw you, we heard you, we appreciate you.
No, it was pretty epic. But we ain't actually, after we'd sort of done all that bit, we actually had a game of rugby to focus on. And it didn't disappoint. It was a hell of a game.
Before we even get into that, the build-up didn't stop there. Once we get in the stadium, we bump into George Robson, the GOAT.
Yeah, the GOAT.
Have a little photo with him. We're doing photos with Toulouse fans. And it's just a really nice atmosphere about it. And we're then pitch side for about 45 minutes before the game.
Oh, Christ. Yeah, I forgot.
Right
that,
behind the TNT cameras. You got Sarah Elgin there, who's absolutely loving the sing song, and she gets the camera to turn around, and we're on the TV. You've got Nev there, who you managed to summon over to take a selfie with everybody, which is one of my favourite photos from the whole trip. You've then got Nick David rocking up in full kit, his actual big game kit with David 14 on the back, which was pretty cool. Lots of little stories throughout the day, lots of little anecdotes. Yeah. One of my favourite moments from the entire trip was those 45 minutes pitch side where we all had our flags out. We were all singing, and one by one, the boys would come out and we'd sing for Danny Kerr, and we would sing for Marcus Smith, and we would sing for Simon Kerr. And one by one, they all got a song and they all really enjoyed it. And I know you were really admiring Jared Evans' new haircut as well.
Yeah, sharp trim on Drev. He loved it.
And you sure told him about it, didn't you? Made him feel 10 feet tall.
Gotta make the boys feel good, mate. Gotta make them good. Jeff, you look so good. So good. Oh, brilliant. Should we do a little bit of selection chat? Not that there's actually much to talk about, but...
Yeah, I think you and I only really disagreed on one position, I think, didn't we? And that was scrum half.
Yeah, I think it was the right call. I just think... I mean, the team's basically for the last 3 or 4 weeks pretty much picked itself. And weirdly, the only sort of... difficult conversations have been around the two that
are two stalwarts.
Our two stalwarts, two club legends. And we spoke about it last week, sort of together. And I just thought Danny's experience in that big game, and I also thought that Marla would have got the run, but you know, Finn Baxter's things at the minute, so that was absolutely fine with me seeing either of them.
He won us an excellent scrum penalty our own 5 meter line, which led to us going upfield and scoring. So
yeah.
I thought he was a good pick, and I actually thought he came off at the right time as well. I thought giving Joe Marler half an hour instead of sort of 15, 20 minutes was the right thing to do. And I thought Joe Marler made a brilliant impact when he did come on. We'll talk about that when we go through it chronologically. I still think I'd have gone with Will Porter. I think Danny was excellent, but I just, maybe this is unfair to say, but I just felt like DuPont did what he wanted. And I know that's what DuPont does, but I didn't feel like we applied enough pressure on him. And when Will Porter did come on and he was scragging him at the back of a scrum and really getting after him, I thought, oof, I wonder how things could have been if we'd been doing that the full 80 minutes. But we'll go into the game because it was a coin toss for me in the end. I didn't mind if it was Danny or Will Porter.
Very, very quickly, one more
form needed rewarding.
One more on the selection thing. Good to see our new mate James Chisholm back in the side.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
That was
cool, a good pick. But also, I think, kind of enforced.
Yeah, well, Lorde came. Well, Lorde wasn't fit for big game, was he?
Exactly, so yeah. In the warm-up. Lorde picked up an injury, didn't he? So, but okay, then let's get into it. It wasn't the start we wanted, but in a sort of raucous crowd and sort of effectively a home game for them, what we heard from Toulouse fans in the build-up to the game was, if they go behind early or get a couple of setbacks, it's quite easy for their heads to drop. So we're thinking, right, if we can have a fast start like Bordeaux, it really, really could be on here. And unfortunately, we didn't quite get it that way. They looked good from the very first minute, didn't they?
Yeah. I think that's why I was so nervous for the first 10 minutes, because I just wanted us to get into the game. And I think that's why I enjoyed Bordeaux so much, is because we were in the game from the early sort of exchanges, where we did start a little bit slowly. It took us 40 minutes to just get any points, but it was more that we just didn't quite snap into gear in the first couple of minutes. And then obviously LaBelle went over in the corner.
I guess it was almost reflecting the crowd, wasn't it? I don't want to call you out, but the first 10 minutes you were not starstruck, but I could tell you were nervous.
Yeah.
So quite, I've ever heard you in the first 10 minutes, just sort of trying to absorb it all. And maybe there was an element of the occasion getting to us very, very early. And maybe that's unfair. And I don't mean it as literally as being overwhelmed, but I think Toulouse are experts in that kind of scenario. They're on their home turf with their crowd behind them.
Yeah.
And to be honest, it was a loose line out that sucks us in and gives them 15 meters of space out wide, and into Max throwing that pass over the top, and obviously they go in. And unfortunately, it wasn't the only line out error that led to a Toulouse try on the day, but big mistakes in important areas costing us.
But they are big mistakes, but they're not.
I know what you mean. They're not big mistakes.
They're not mistakes that absolutely kill you if you're playing Gloucester or, you know, Leicester or Sale. But we're not. We were playing Toulouse, and smaller mistakes that they're just too good to punish. They're too good not to punish you.
Correct.
And then there was 10 minutes then where we were a bit again. After that 10 minutes, we were still feeling our way into the game. And then obviously we score.
We bounced back very well, you know.
Yeah, and that's sort of why I felt a bit better about it, because you just think we clearly didn't start brilliantly, but we didn't start brilliantly and start leaking points. You know, if they just scored a couple maybe in the first 10, where we still hadn't really got going, you're then thinking, well, we've already got a mountain to climb.
Yeah, but we didn't. I also think going behind so early is fine, because you've got so much of the game left, and we know that typically the second half of the first half, minutes 20 to 40, is when we score most of our tries, or at least that's what the stats were telling us. And we've started pretty slowly in quite a few games this season, so we've become a bit of a second half team all of a sudden. So I wasn't massively worried, and I think you described it perfectly there. We were kind of feeling our way into the game, trying to silence the crowd for a little bit, and we managed to work our way upfield, and it was shades of Marcus versus Glasgow. It was shades of Marcus versus Racing. We've seen it lots of times on Europe's biggest stage, and it just can't be defended. But the double step inside both times, dives over.
Yeah.
You know he's going to get the conversion. We're right next to the sticks. And you're thinking, after 15 minutes, we're leading Toulouse in Toulouse in a European semi, having ridden the wave of the first 15 minutes where you've just got to battle through that and stay in touch.
Do you know what's mad about that try as well? And I'm looking at it now. Dommers goes to reach over the line.
So close.
And
so
just like, close. But at that stage, like, he, you know, like, for anyone that's ever held a rugby ball, you know, you've got your hand around it and you're sort of tucking it into your wrist when you've got one arm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the sort of one where if you really go and try and score that, you have to sort of release that grip on it and sort of get it down with your fingers.
Yeah.
And if you're short, or often that can be knocked on at times because you sort of lose that grip on it.
Yeah, that's split-second decision.
It just makes a sort of semi-decision just to sort of drag it back in and keep the hold of the ball. And then Marcus goes and dances through two or three, and then I'm suddenly feeling all squiffy after that.
Big time. Big time. Yeah. And it's tit for tat. We went toe-to-toe with Toulouse, didn't we? They obviously bounced back. But then Lewis Leiner with the ball, 50-22. Probably a 49-22,
yeah.
49.5-22.
Yeah.
I can see why we rolled with it, and I'm pleased we did, because that 50-22 leads to one of the most dominant driving maul tries I think we have ever scored in European rugby.
Yeah,
I think we could have added another 10 metres onto that and we'd have still got over the line.
Yeah.
The boys just absolutely nailed that set piece, didn't they?
Yeah.
And that's the thing, because I don't like bashing the line out too much, because when it clicks, we've had some brilliant line out work this season.
Driving maul's been quite a big weapon for us all year, hasn't it?
It has, yeah, it really has. Sam Riley's rocked up and scored loads of tries off the bench in that driving maul role. And it wasn't actually Wacker that got it down. It was Will Evans. And I was expecting the double-handed fist pump, giving it full beans, but he was properly buried in that maul. Took him about 10 seconds to get up. And by that moment, it was about getting back to the halfway line. But a really important score for us.
But unfortunately, it's then that overthrown line out that gives them counter-attack ball for the next one, isn't it?
Yeah, and this is the killer blow as well, I think. And I think this is what Danny Wilson and Billy Millard reference in sort of the first half
It wasn't actually the next one. It was after Flamont's one, and then it's DuPont's first one where they get that counter-attack.
Exactly, yeah. It's DuPont's try 3 minutes before half-time that really kind of made the contest too much for us to come back from. 31-12 at halftime is a huge deficit against anybody, let alone to lose away. But it was a killer blow. It was something that was avoidable. It was a line out over the top, which is just a set piece failure. And then they've got some absolutely mustard backs out wide that just sort of cut us through. And a very quick pick and go from Malvaca gets them a line break. And when Toulouse get a line break, it is very hard to stop them.
And it's annoying because
DuPont was just too quick as well. Like, by the time he's there, he's not even thinking about passing that ball. He's getting it as quickly as possible and dotting it over the line. And unfortunately, that put it slightly out of our reach, didn't it?
Well, you can just see him like trailing the runner and just thinking, right, where am I going to nip in and nick this one from? But yeah, it was a bit of a gut wrencher. But yeah, 31-12 at half time. And I sort of went to rush to the toilet, and there was a bit of an atmosphere amongst the home fans who were all having a bit of a Toulouse on, all that sort of stuff during the half time. And I was fine. I felt really good. I felt positive. Because you always believe, and you always were just saying, right, look, well, we need to just swing the bat a little bit harder. And there was a couple of Harlequins fans sort of looking at me and so, what do you reckon? And I just said, look, we just need to have a really bright start. It's a semi-final. It's 15 men against 15 men. They're not monsters. They're not giants. You know, we just need to try and find our way back into the game. But we do have to do it quite quickly. And I think that first 10 minutes of the second half was, well, first 10, 15 minutes of the second half.
Shades of Bristanbul, wasn't it?
I was so close to losing my sausages.
I think I did lose my sausages. It was, it was sort of turn to the person next to you, grab their head and sort of scream at each other. It's exactly what it was. And that was the only feeling that I could possibly have wanted from a match day like that, was just that euphoria, that belief, that hope.
Yeah.
And when Caden goes over,
we look
good. It was an unbelievable finish. And all of a sudden you're thinking, We can really score from anywhere against anyone, can't we? It's not just all smoke and mirrors. We genuinely can do that.
Yeah. And the Tyrone Green try.
This is the try of the day, without a doubt. The initial break he makes, the offload to Caden, and then somehow he's the first receiver off that Caden Murley ruck.
Yeah.
He's straight back to his feet and he is gunning it through that line.
You've never seen anyone run a harder line.
You've never and seen Tyrone like, Green like take a crash ball like that either, have you?
No,
it's running it back off it's almost NFL style, isn't it? Where you sort of receive the ball and you run it back upfield and try and beat a few men. Not this time. Tyron Green was never being stopped. He ran past the forward, I think.
It's the offload before that, because he gets like...
Oh, to Liner, you mean?
No, the offload to Kane. The offload to Liner for Kane's carry. So he goes...
In that phase play, there's sort of two or three phases. And I think the first one is to Liner, and it is just ridiculous. And then you're right, the second one, when he makes the latest break, is to Caden.
It's like the one over the top, like basketball style. Yeah, it's
too
a joke.
Good.
Yeah,
just joke. Too good. Is there a better fullback in world rugby?
Oh, there was, you know.
I don't know.
It qualifies for England next year.
It does, which means South Africa are going to cap him in the summer, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly.
And so they should.
Yeah.
So they should. Hopefully. And I think he really wants to play for them as well. I think he got asked a question recently about England, and he's like, look, I'll have to make a family decision at some point. And obviously, when you get paid $23,000 a game for England, you're probably going to take it. Yeah. But I think his heart is set on South Africa, and he's good enough.
Yeah. I mean, difficult to talk about the last few minutes of the game. We need to talk about the card, but I need to hold my hands up and say that I haven't. Again, this is really poor, because it sounds like in a game of football where they ask the manager, "Oh, well, what do you think?" I'm not saying. I'm not going to watch it back, but I actually haven't been able to watch it back on the little 3 minute instant highlights that they put on YouTube. You don't get all that.
I've watched it back, but albeit on an iPhone screen, so not particularly high resolution or close up. A, it was a penalty to us in the first place because they were holding on. So that event should never have even taken place, but the referee missed that one. Referee, by the way, Andrew Brace, we're in the same restaurant as him and John Lacey and Frank Murphy the night before. Yeah. And we were based right by the toilets. And any time they went to the toilet, they obviously couldn't not clock eyes with us.
Yeah.
Ended up having a really good chat with Andrew Brace and a really good chat with John Lacey as well. Both really nice, good people. And it's interesting actually having a normal conversation with a referee, because they are real people. They're not just robots that make decisions and put their arm up left or right, depending on the team. But we asked him about, when I say him, I mean John Lacey, who I don't believe referees. He's sort of head of EPCR refs or something now.
Right.
And he was talking to us about the Carl Dixon thing the week before. I know I'm sidetracking.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And we said, look, what do you make of it? Because much like what you were saying on Twitter the other day, Mike, question the decision, but don't question the man's integrity. And he agreed with all of that. But he did say, look, the RFU have really hung him up to dry here. Really, like, he didn't need to be refereeing that game. And you've got to think about the people that work for you, and you've got to try and protect them as best you can. And if you're going to be putting them in positions where that is compromised, rightly or wrongly, you should be looking internally at yourself. So I think he was sort of the agreement that Carl Dixon is a great referee and is absolutely not biased and should never be questioned that way. But you can protect him from not putting him in those situations. There are enough referees out there.
Sounds like he's sitting on the fence too much for me.
Possibly. but anyway, yeah, Andrew Brace missed that turnover, and then Waka goes through and he's horizontal.
Well, do you know what?
His weight is where his hips are, so he's in a good position. But DuPont is also leaning down to pick up the ball. So at that point, I don't know where else you can hit to try and clear him out.
Well, seeing as we're talking about it, I've actually just pinged this up on my phone. I've got it up now.
I think there's mitigation. It is contact to the head. I don't feel like there's much force.
So, I mean,
DuPont goes down like it's two-footed challenge to his knee in football.
It almost feels like one of those ones where, you know, like with Danny's one against Laws at Biggs and McKickoff, it's like, you know, it's like a negative impact. I can't quite remember the exact wording on it, but it's like a passive collision, that sort of thing, where actually you're going backwards in the tackle. DuPont almost actually looks a bit like that. He looks like he goes down, but then he looks like he's trying to take the weight off, you know, to move back and out of the way of it. And I think Waka probably does catch him sort of shoulder on the sort of lower part of the front of his, you know, his face, sort of down towards the chin, nosy area. It's not direct to the top of his head, but
look, you kind of think it's a bit annoying, because could it be one of those rugby incidents. You see those 100 times in the game and they never get pulled up. But when you slow it down and the French TV directors are playing it 30 times on the big screen, he kind of has to look at it, and then he kind of has to make a decision. And Charlie Morgan made a good point when he plays the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire kind of heartbeat slow music.
Yeah.
It does kind of influence subconsciously what you're going to do as a referee, because you're waiting for a big ultimatum. And if Andrew Brace just waves it off as nothing, then I just think...
I think that was the sort of countdown heartbeat sort of in the stadium where you're expecting the decision to come for the home team. Don't know, not sure about that.
I think a yellow is probably fair. I don't know whether it was red or nothing or both. Who knows? But it did cost us, unfortunately, in a key position as well, because it meant when Sam Riley came on, we had to sacrifice Lewis Liner. And that wasn't too much longer after when we had a scrum, but they scored a few phases later, didn't they?
And it just comes straight on. And again, the annoying one of this as well is that Northmore and...
We're so close to getting him off the pitch. But
Northmore
also,
and Liner,
if Liner can hold onto his leg, he's held, and he can't bounce back up and go over the line like he did. But I think Liner comes across so far and hits him so hard that they sort of bounce off each other, so he can't keep him held on the ground. And that just gives him a chance to get up and get over. And yeah, unfortunately, that's all she wrote.
Yeah, and you are also asking them to sort of stop, someone at full tilt 2 or 3 yards out. It's gonna be hard work, isn't it?
They nearly did, didn't they? They very nearly did. But whilst the scoreline looked too much to climb, we looks like we could fire another shot. I think we hoped that we could fire another shot. We played in the right areas. We had good possession. Joe Marler made a lovely break through the midfield, which you very rarely see from him. And then a few phases later, we obviously get that penalty. He throws sort of the cup over the back of Ramos's head, and unfortunately, it gets reversed. And that was our last opportunity to mount a comeback, albeit incredibly unlikely. And I don't buy into anything I'm reading online about Joe Marler costing us. He didn't cost us.
No.
There's no one moment of a game that costs us. And to be honest, Ramos probably deserved it. So,
it felt like to me it was one of those times where Marler's just trying to make something happen to an opposition player where they do something silly, and Marler just thinks, I can do this and get away with it to the point where I'm not.
That's what I mean. If you give him like a little nudge and Ramos turns around and gives him a big old shove, maybe they're marching us another 10 metres forwards.
Yeah.
And it's become a really good sort of Joe Marler moment getting under
his
skin, and we're all raving about it. He's just got it a little bit wrong, hasn't he?
Just slightly. Yeah. Just slightly.
It's a shame, because if we had gone forward another 10 metres, that ball for sure is going on their 5 metre line.
Yeah.
We've got another driving ball rollout, and when they click, they click.
Yeah. Who knows?
But anyway, I think to summarise the game, the bat was very much swung.
Yeah, it had a big old swing, didn't it?
Boys looked like they enjoyed themselves. We had a lot to cheer.
Yeah,
we were in it, and we were really in it. And a couple of mistakes ended up costing us. And it goes to show that these big European powerhouses like Toulouse and Leinster, if you're able to bring someone like Ramos off the bench, it's just different level. Having Kinghorn at fullback and Unsamak at 10. And if one of them's coming off, you've got Ramos coming on. It's just different level.
But they were gettable, weren't they? They weren't gettable. They weren't that far ahead. They were gettable. It's just, on the day the best team won the game.
They did.
But take so much enjoyment from the fact that we weren't that far away from the best team that Europe... Well, not this individual best team, but the biggest powerhouse that European rugby has probably ever seen in Toulouse.
Are we Toulouse or are we Leinster?
Toulouse.
Yeah, I think so.
I just think there's so much more fun to watch.
Although
it's tough happening against you, some of it was pretty special. I mean, we did actually get to have a pretty good look at Dupont at the Stoop this year. Unsmack wasn't playing, but I mean, watching them two sort of go together was pretty cool to watch. They are pretty special. But the one that was really, really impressed me was Costas, the 13, or Costa, however you pronounce it.
Yeah, Paul Cost.
Jesus, he looks good for 21, 22, doesn't he? With a big sort of blonde hair flowing in the breeze when he's going at full tilt. He's gonna be half decent in a couple of years, isn't he, if he isn't already?
That's what I mean. You look at their star-studded names, and then they've got emerging talent who are even better. It is hard to cope with, but I don't want to gush over Toulouse too much. I'd quite like to go back to our boys and André Esterhazy on his knees at full time, looking really deflated. His last ever European game for Harlequins. He's been instrumental for us ever since he joined the club, and he was colossal again, just running over Unsamak, and actually took a high shot from Unsamak at one point, I thought, which was worthy of a card. But Ironically, they didn't show that on the replays, did they? Yeah.
But he's not done. He's not done yet. Either,
he's not done yet, and it was interesting to see him sort of so visibly emotional after the game, because you don't think about these players in their last games in semi-finals things like that. And I hope he doesn't feel too gutted, because he's been brilliant for us in every game he's played, and he was excellent again at the weekend, and he's still got a few more to go for us.
Got a few more, hasn't he? Yeah.
Will Collier is another one.
Will Collier, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we haven't had sort of official announcements of that yet, either have we, but we think it's pretty much, it's all happening.
It's in the Telegraph today as well. I think everyone's just sort of announced it for him and for and forecast, but yeah.
I'm
official. Yeah. On that note, we've not had any renewals or signings yet, have we?
Not yet.
I can't remember the last time we went a full season before any of that was made public.
It'll come, won't it? It will come. I'm sure there's a few things kicking around that we'll hear about soon. But
definitely. Yeah. Well, should we do some three-word reviews?
Yeah, that's a good way to finish, actually, isn't it? Let's finish this little segment in Europe. There is there were plenty again. How many did we get this time? 60-odd. Yeah, 60-odd. Go on, you take us away. What do you want to start with?
There's a few multiple submissions. Champions next year is a good one. Never gave up. Gutted but proud. And then one that is very, very common. Swing the bat or swung the bat is in there quite a lot. First half woes. Sunshine Sunday. Swing ball. Love our boys. We're so proud. If, buts, maybes, so close. Tyrone Green, awesomeness. There's a lot in here. Super proud. Yeah. Quinn is probably a great one that can sum it up.
Always our DNA, I like.
Yes.
From Matt Cuthbert, always our DNA. I think that's really good. Paul Macy, never back down. Mike Ching, done us proud. Tim Turner, made us proud. Andrew Warner having a little bit of a dig at your mate in the pub. Brace for impact. Proud and gutted. I'm going to finish on this one. Daniel Cosford went down swinging.
Nice. Okay. So before we wrap up on Toulouse and turn our attention back to the Premiership, I did use my 4-hour layover to try and write a bit of a synopsis on the game. Titled it The Tale of Toulouse.
Are you gonna put in some really like sort of rhythmic music? Nice
background piano music, as I really
Yeah, something like that. We'll see. Take it away.
We brought our bats, our flags, our flares. We sang for Danny Care. We danced in the streets before the match. Rest assured, we'd swing the bat. And when Marcus Smith's dancing feet got the Quins fans out of their seats, we begun to dare to dream. In Joe Marler's words, believe, believe. In the second half, we started early. A blinder scored by Caden Murley. Tyrone Green's twinkle toes added to Toulouse's woes. But a class above were Europe's best. Antoine Dupont did the rest. As one campaign ends, another really begins. It's heating up and the top four running. So wear your quarters, gather yourselves. Why would you support anybody else?
You know what? And you did that on the plane?
Did that on the plane, mate. Yeah, and a little edit as well. A little video edit.
I didn't know you did English A-level. I didn't know you were a poet.
I'm a social media manager, mate. It's all about crafting the caption. I'm a word lyricist.
That's a sonnet. That's a Shakespeare. Be proud of them.
Brought
a tear to my eye, William.
I know. I'm looking forward to listening to it when I'm sort of Monday blues on a Tuesday after a bank holiday. Anyway.
Might have to put that on a T-shirt.
I don't think there's enough ink. We'll wrap up Toulouse there. Thank you so much to everybody that we spent the weekend with. It was one of the great ones that will live long in the memory. To anybody that wasn't there and supported from the stoop or the cabbage patch or watched at home, you support an unbelievable team, and we're so grateful to be able to experience things like that with everybody. So let's get out for the last few games of the season and let's go win a trophy. And on that note, Exeter away is massive. I'm going with Bej. We're driving down there and back in a day, actually. Lots of mileage for me in Quins this season. And it's the first time I've done Sandy Park on a match day as well. So I'm
going to
take that one off my list, which will be good. Team-wise, I just don't know, because I'd have thought maybe you go all guns blazing at Bristol at home, because that could be a straight shootout and there might be some sore bodies after this weekend, and maybe you change a few names. But actually, two games left, full whack all the way.
Yeah, you have to, because I mean, if we rest, if we rotate, if we do this and we do that, and we're, you know, I'm not going to use the word playing not our best side, but if we're playing a different looking side, and you lose to Exeter, then that almost takes it out of our hands as well. So now we've got to go down there. We've got to go all out. We've got to go and get them. I think there would be a couple of changes. Straight off my head, I wonder if Marler will start. I wonder if also...
I think I would start Marler.
Yeah, I also think...
Finn looked tired after 50 minutes. He's had a long season, his longest season, sort of top-level professional rugby, isn't it, for Harlequin's first team week in, week out. So
yeah,
I think a bit of experience will help as well.
Yeah, I wonder whether you might start Chiz, just given the amount of work that Chandler's got through in the last couple of weeks. But you were suggesting that maybe
I've actually got him at seven. Basically,
I was saying
to him about how I think he's played his best rugby for Quins at seven, and Webb has just been a workhorse that has just gone every single week, and he came off quite early against Toulouse.
Yeah,
so I think maybe if you can spare him a few minutes, then you do.
Possibly.
Chandler goes again. Chandler looks like he's getting better every week, so I would never stop him until we have to.
I think Porter might start. And I think the backs will stay with the same recipe that's taken us to this point. I think I'd be picking an unchanged team in the backs, bar Porter at nine, I think.
I'd go Porter at nine, but I'd also go Oscar Beard on the wing to deal with Emmanuel Faye-Wobozo. I think he's a really good defender, Oscar. And I think Liner's sort of... Manny's an excellent try scorer, but I think our defensive choice would be Oscar Beard.
But Manny's been playing at 14 on the right, and Caden will be on that side, won't he? So I think that's a mouth-watering matchup.
It is, isn't it?
But I think, I think it'll be Caden on the left edge and Manny on the right for Exeter.
You still go Liner then?
Yeah, I think so. Just continuity, I think, maybe is going to be important where we can get it, because I think you're right, there's going to be...
Well, Beard's our best 23 option, isn't he? So
yeah, I think that's part of the decision, is that Oscar gives you loads more flexibility off the bench. I don't think it's about who gets to start so much. I think it's about what you can do for the 80 and who gives you that, you know, that safety net of two or three other positions. So I think I'd stay the same.
And the other changes I'd made was actually a brand new front row. I'd call Marler, Riley and Lewis.
Well, Dylan Lewis wasn't in the side, was he? So I wonder if that's...
No, but he's fit.
Well, he was out there and warming up and that sort of stuff. So
he's fit. I think you bring him in.
Yeah, very possibly. But again...
I think Riley's been excellent all season and would quite happily start him. I don't know the stats off the top of my head, but let's say 70% of our games this season have been started by Jack Walker. I wouldn't mind if that went to 60 and Riley went to 40 next year. I can see him starting a few more for us. I think he's brilliant. You look at the likes of Theo Dan at Saracens getting more game time, and he's getting better and better and better. I think Riley needs to get a few more minutes, and a few more starts is the way to do that.
I don't. Yeah, I've got no issue with it. No issue with it at all, really. I just know that I won't be playing because I slipped in the shower this morning at the hotel. My knee, honestly, I was with John Boy. He'll be listening to this and. I don't know if anyone else is staying in that Ibis Central Hotel, but I put one foot on the floor as I got out of the shower this morning. Still nursing my hangover. One foot went down and the other one just didn't fancy keeping up. And I sounded like a bomb had gone off in there. I was crashing through the doors and hammering myself into the toilet. It was a nightmare. But anyhow, I'm fine with that. I think, and like you say, I'm pleased you're going to be there. I'm pleased you're getting some miles in your legs. And I'm also pleased that we've still got loads to look forward to this season. We've got two games left in the Premiership to get ourselves into that top four. If we can sneak into third, maybe that would be great. And then we've got to go and try and do our best to get our hands on some silverware. And I think potentially a little bit like the year we won it, which we regularly reference for obvious reasons, I think we might just be getting to the stage now, especially after the result this weekend, where people are going to look at us and think, Jesus, they weren't blown away by Toulouse when everyone thought that we would be. I think there'd be a few teams that are either just ahead of us currently or, you know, in the mix with us, and they'd go, Shit, I don't really fancy playing Quins in the playoffs. You know, in a one-off game, in 80 minutes, they can beat you from anywhere. I think that's what we've got to hang our hat on in the next sort of 3 or 4 weeks, I think.
There's a feel-good factor, isn't there? The feel-good factor's back. There's genuine belief, and I think it's infectious that that comes through the club, the staff, the players, the coaches. But I think every single fan that was part of that weekend that we've just had genuinely believes that we can go mount a charge now, win our last two games, get a good semi-final draw, put the work in, and then we'll see you at Twickenham.
Big time. Well, look, from me, William, and obviously Don Nick will be listening. Just so much fun spending another little weekend in the south of France with you, mate. It's been great fun, and thank everyone for just having the best time. It's been a lot of fun this year, from Cardiff down to Bordeaux, everywhere in between. A European Cup semi-final and one that I will never ever forget. It's been amazing fun, mate, and I'll leave you to sign us off.
Why would you support anybody else?
Unreal. Have a great week, everyone. Thank you so much, and we look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks back down the street.